And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 310, continuing our positional previews for the 2026 fantasy baseball season, heading to the outfield, part one of three coming your direction. We'll get to that, some news, because I think there was some news tonight, and much, much more. But before we get there, you can follow me on Twitter at BDentric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. And my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ, Ryan Bluefield. How we doing, my friend?
Doing good, man. Busy week, Bubba in the Bloom headquarters, I guess. I was going to say LLC for some reason, but we're not. Two regular shows and two bonus shows. But all were awesome, especially the auction last night and the show with Rob, the crossover episode with Pull Hitter. So check those out if you are on the Patreon. Thank you to Rob for putting up with us for an hour and a half, and then everyone that was in the chat last night for the auction. That was incredible. I still have my, for folks that, you know, weren't following, I started the auction with actual, I went to Kinko's and printed my sheets out, tore them all up before the first break. Yep. Yeah. Had to pivot. So lessons learned aplenty from last evening's auction.
Caveman life isn't easy, folks. Gabe, that's all I got to say. Not for the faint of heart.
No, my pen was dying out. The font was too small on the printout. The ink on my pen that I use once a year is going out. There's squiggly lines everywhere. It's a disaster. So,
great.
Made for a good show, though.
Very good show.
I think what will make for a good show tonight is your raw Kyle Tucker reaction. By the way, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Redid my rankings for catcher through third base for the draft kit while all hell was breaking loose on Twitter.
So this was like an hour or two before we started recording. Yep. Is the Tucker news?
Yeah. So no, I'm fine. It's all good. You get numb to this thing by now. It's just the same old thing, different day. Like, just wake me up after they sign Bobichet. That sounds about right. So it's all good. It's just par for the course right now. Hey, if it wasn't for a random Miguel Rojas home run, like, they wouldn't have won the World Series last year. So they can be beat, is my point. Like, it is possible.
So, I mean, I would even argue signing Tucker, what does that actually do the World Series odds?
Shouldn't change much.
Yeah. Obviously, I mean, it goes up, but I would think it's minuscule.
We'll get to that shortly. Before we get there, some housekeeping news. Listener league updates, which again, we'll only do this a couple more times once they're all wrapped up in full. We're about 20 people, 25 people short to wrap up all 10 leagues.
Right. So the sooner everyone signs up, the quicker we'll stop talking about it. But we've got 120 people signed up for slots on our survey out of 150. So we need 30 more. If you are a Patreon member, it is a Patreon post, the link to the survey. If you don't see it, just message one of us or email the show, bubbabloompod@gmail.com. If you're one of our free members and you reached out to us and you haven't heard from us, please let us know. I think I got everyone. But if I didn't get you, let us know. And obviously, if you're still interested, let us know. Paid folks get guaranteed spots. Free Patreon members with the review get first come, first serve after that. So, we've already filled 8 out of the 10 leagues. We've secured 8 streaming spots out of the 10 leagues as well. So it's shaping up to be another awesome listener league season. All in the second half of February is when the auctions are going to take place.
And I want to say that, yes, paid members get priority only for so long, though eventually we have to fill them up. So if you come after the fact and they're full, apologies. But the door's been open for a while, and it's going to shut pretty soon. So. Yeah. If you want in, get in quickly, let us know, and we'll take care of that. And for those that don't know, that are interested, and our listeners, they are $50, 15-team auction leagues. There's first, second, and third place get paid in these leagues. They're fab leagues. So it's like a standard roto fab league auction. Each league has, like I said, payouts first, second, and third. But there's also an overall component to this. And as awesome as they were last year, Baseball HQ decided to partner up with us again. If you win your league, besides your monetary money, you get a 2027 Baseball HQ full year subscription, which is really awesome. And if you win the overall, you get a First Pitch Arizona free registration. So they came through and hooked it up with that once again.
Absolutely. Part of that too, you don't even have to be in the listener league. All you have to do is listen to the show and use this wonderful, wonderful promo code, Bubba26. No Bloom, just Bubba26. I think I know why, but Bubba26, you get $10 off a draft prep subscription at Baseball HQ, which is full site access to their content, tools, projections through April. And I think, I know it's well worth the cost there. So anyone, we're not promoting this outside of the show. This is pure just listener discount. Anyone who wants to check out Baseball HQ, use code Bubba26 at checkout, and definitely use it next year. Hopefully when the code is Bloom27, we've got to outpace Bubba26.
Yeah. We'll see how that goes. If enough people sign up this year, they might stick to it. So just saying, but yeah, so there's your listener league talk for the night. We will move on from there and we will talk a little bit of news here. Cause again, some things happened this evening. The West Coast Evil Empire that resides in Los Angeles, California, the blue and white team known as the Dodgers, they signed Kyle Tucker to a four-year, $240 million deal. With the luxury tax, comes out to $126 million a year to have Kyle Tucker. The Dodgers now have $2.11 billion in guaranteed money on the books for their
including
team.
Including deferrals, right?
Yeah, including deferrals. It's pretty impressive stuff they have going on over there. For fantasy, this does not a whole lot for me. Kyle Tucker's Kyle Tucker. There's always a narrative I'll give Ryan. It's like only so many guys could drive in runs. So, like, how does that work? Someone's going to take a hit. But as long as Tucker's healthy, he's still one of the best outfielders in baseball.
Yes, and coincidentally enough, we will talk about Kyle Tucker since we're doing the top 30 outfield tonight. But yeah, it doesn't really change. I mean, we all knew Kyle Tucker was signing somewhere. We all hoped it wasn't the Dodgers. Unfortunately, it was the Dodgers. Like you, to your what you were saying earlier, Bubba, just kind of numb to it. I kind of am too. Would just love to see some variety with some of these free agent signings and just have other teams be involved in this. It's an entirely separate conversation and the ripples of that for another day, but ho-hum, another star goes to the Dodgers. Yeah, fantasy wise, what we're thinking, obviously Kyle Tucker starts and hits in the middle of that lineup, and it's an upgrade to his counting stats. It kind of has to be. Tommy Edman probably stays at second base, I hope. Or probably moves to second base / stays at second base. He may have been in the corner outfield picture. And then maybe Hyesung Kim is probably the odd man out in LA. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah. Hyesung Kim was already leaning towards being the odd man out in LA. And now it's definitely leaning that direction. Start in AAA, get regular at bats, come up when Edman gets hurt or something. See where it goes. As Michael C says, I was going to hit on this. It's a great ballpark in LA for left-handed power.
Yep.
Like we've talked about recently, the top five ballparks in for home runs, LA and Anaheim, the two LA places, are both on the list. People forget that the ball does fly out of those ballparks because it gets a little warm down here compared to what people expect. It's not like San Francisco where you have a marine layer. Chavez Ravine is a ravine. It's up in the hills of Los Angeles, and the ball goes far when these bad pitchers, because no one else spends money in the NL West, come into town. So yeah, Tucker's gonna be fine. As long as he's healthy, the dude's a 25-25, potentially 30-30 guy, and Hyesung Kim seems to be the odd man out.
Yep.
Right about the same time as the Tucker signing got announced, maybe like I think I saw 4 minute
it was back to back like passing bunk, because I get notifications for passing and it was like boom. Well,
I was doing my rankings and my phone lit up, and my first one I saw was the trade because that was the most recent tweet. So I missed the Tucker initially, and then I saw it. So there was a three-team trade that took place shortly after Kyle Tucker signed between the Rays, the Reds, and the Angels. Here's the brass tacks. Josh Lowe goes from Tampa Bay to the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Gavin Lux and Chris Clark go to the Rays. Brock Burke goes to the Reds. So a couple of relief pitchers move things around. Let's start in Anaheim, Ryan. where Josh Lowe now goes to the Angels. Like, Josh Lowe's a guy that, yeah, he has fantasy interest. He's always had fantasy interest, but it's health and platoons that has always been a slight concern with Josh Lowe. But now he joins an outfield with Joe Adell, Jorge Soler, with Mike Trout at DH. Does this do anything for you when it comes to Josh Lowe?
That is a pretty rough outfield, by the way, just defensively. So maybe all my Yusei Kikuchi shares take another hit. I don't know. For Lowe himself, I don't think this really changes much. I mean, if anything, maybe he will play a little bit more against left-handed pitching due to the lack of options otherwise in Anaheim. Do we want Josh Lowe playing against left-handed pitching is entirely other question. And will Josh Lowe stay healthy is also an entirely different question. But for me, I've actually drafted Josh Lowe a few times. Like the batting average, or the speed upside alone for me at 278 is pretty juicy. You just need health, and at ADP 278, which is where Lowe has been going over the last month in 15 teamers, it's a risk I'm willing to take. So not much changes for me for Josh Lowe, to be honest.
Yeah, very affordable price tag for Lowe. I guess I like him slightly more just because I'm not worried that the platoon is much. Like, Roster Resource has Teodosio, but I don't see that being a massive threat long term. Mm-hmm. And honestly, the ballpark's better than hitting the Trop, so that's also a plus when it comes to Lowe. So yeah, I think it's a tad tick up for me when it comes to Josh Lowe. Gavin Lux is out of Cincinnati. We'll start with first going to Tampa Bay. Obviously, Brandon Lau is in Pittsburgh now. So Gavin Lux could return to his main position of second base here and have an impact at that usage, giving back to second base outfield eligibility, since the outfield is just overly packed already, even with Josh Lowe leaving town. Any thoughts on Gavin Lux, who both me and you aren't the most excited person about?
No, I mean, Gavin Lux could hit in a little league park. I don't know. I mean, he had 5 home runs and 503 plate appearances last year and 1 steal. Holy God. Yep.
No, it was bad.
I didn't realize really 6 homers plus steals and 500 plus plate appearances.
Yeah. He was absolutely dog manure. So,
and I don't think dog manure, you know, turns into potpourri when you move from Cincinnati to Tampa. So, Gavin Lux still off my board.
Smells more like Ben Gay in Tampa Bay due to the retirement communities. The big winner, the best part of this entire 3-team trade, best part about it all. We've been saying forever that Sal Stewart should start on opening day. He will start. We're pretty optimistic. Most of us were on this. The biggest thing that was said by myself and others was get Gavin Lux out of the way. Legit said this with Ben Tin as I recorded as about 2 hours before this trade happened. I said, because we talked about Sal Stewart on the show. And then it happens, and Sal Stewart should be penciled in as the DH for the Cincinnati Reds, barring something crazy happening. And this is tremendous for me. And that ADP should be climbing, Ryan. It's an ADP that's sitting around 215 right now. That's one that's going to climb.
I think so. I think congrats to, I mean, you never know how this is going to pan out, but congrats on those early prices to folks who got Sal Stewart. You know, never know. Could fall flat first full MLB season, but everything I see just from scouting reports, scouting the stat line as well, like Sal Stewart looks really damn good. And I think the Reds realizing that and getting Gavin Lux out of the way, that seems intentional to me. So Sal Stewart is, of any of these signings, Kyle Tucker included, we're going to talk about Ranger Suarez in a minute, like Sal Stewart's stock is higher than anybody else's relatively before all these trades. And obviously in an indirect way, but to me, that's the biggest takeaway here is Sal Stewart time.
Yep, totally agree. All right, you mentioned Ranger Suarez. The Red Sox made their first off-season signing take place. Yep. Signing Ranger Suarez to a 5-year deal. He's going to slot into that rotation with Crochet, Sonny Gray, Brian Bayo. There's a lot of other options in the back there. That's another interesting discussion point out of this ripple effect potentially. But Ranger Suarez has been a consistent, like, really solid pitcher ratios-wise. Strikeouts are there. I've always liked Ranger. I was drafting him. Like, I didn't care where he was signing to begin with. Where are you at on this one? Because he has got an ADP of around 160, 165 right now.
Yeah, it doesn't change to me. I think the proposition with Ranger is how many innings are you going to get? I mean, it's been 150 plus each of the last 2 seasons, which is fantastic, which is what you kind of are paying for at that price. And I think you're just going to get pretty solid ratios. And I think just team context wise, you've got a decent bullpen in Boston there behind Ranger Suarez and a pretty good lineup helping him out. So not much changes for me with Ranger Suarez. It's just like, I think the biggest thing is what happens to Peyton Tolley, Connelly Early, our guy, Kyle Harrison, who might be like SP12 on the damn Red Sox now.
He's gone right about now.
I took Harrison in the meatball draft like early on, but he gets further pushed out. But I think the Tolley Connelly Early conversation is probably the biggest ripple here. I mean, we knew Ranger Suarez was going to sign somewhere and start.
It just makes you wonder even deeper now, does one of them get packaged with like a Duran and bring back something else, or like that seems to be a potential option now with Ranger in town, but time will tell. That does seem to be the biggest kind of loser in the situation, is one of those back-end youngsters isn't going to be starting the season with the big club.
Yeah.
Last bit of news, 2025 mascot who disappointed us, Slick Willie. There's a chance that Slick Willie Castro might have a little viability this year again. Second base, third base, outfield eligible, and Slick Willie just signed with the Colorado Rockies, and it never sucks when you do that, especially when you have an ADP of around 385 right now. Yeah. What are your thoughts on Slick Willie heading to Colorado?
Man, still bitter about that, making him our mascot last year. What a whiff. Has to be great. Although I do have Tyro Estrada PTSD here, because I just love Tyro Estrada. Was that last year or 2 years ago when he signed with the Rockies? That was last year.
Yeah.
Just thought that was perfect spot for him, and that did not work out. So got that in the back of my mind, but I think this is great for Willie Castro. I think the price for Willie Castro was low because figured a lot of folks on the, unlike a Ranger Suarez, a Kyle Tucker, we weren't 100% sure if Willie Castro would sign. We knew he'd sign somewhere, but would it be a utility infield spot on a good team, or would it be, in this best case scenario, a starting spot on a bad team in a great park? So this is absolutely going to move up Willie Castro. Still pretty fresh for me, so I haven't updated my rankings to see how high I would push up Willie Castro. But especially in draft and holds where you get triple eligibility, now you got the full-time playing time. Now you have Coors Field, which helps batting average a ton. You hope that they run Willie Castro. I think this is actually a massive boost. Is Castro in your updated rankings?
Yes, he is updated in my rankings, yes. Let me tell you where it's at.
My follow-up question would be.
So at second base, Slick Willie. Where did you go, Slick Willie? I got him up to 15th now at second base, which he was way down from there. Okay. And that might still be too low. And at third base, I have Slick Willie at 18. So definitely like me some Slick Willie.
I've got him down at 30. I need to, and Martin does too, but that's obviously before the trade at second base. So that's going to move up.
I was down there somewhere. I basically almost cut his ranking in half is what it felt like. Not on purpose, it's just where I had him slotted in behind other people.
Maybe I'll move him ahead of Jackson Holliday.
Go for it.
Got a beer bet. Jackson Holliday down. Look at that.
Yeah, I did. See, I'm a realist in this thing. Like, yes, I moved him down, but he's still six. I have him at six, which is the highest out of the three of us still. Because you're still disrespecting him at 13. But
Ranking stands.
Breaking stands. All right. Side note. So with Slick Willie signing with the Rockies, for now looks like Karros is out of a job at third. But Slick Willie could also play second base and Amador's out of the way. He could play the outfield. He could play every position essentially because he is that guy. But it'll be interesting to see exactly what happens. Third base makes the most sense. But Amador hasn't been a world beater either, so Willie could move around all over the place. And it could be a nice batting average boost for Willie, because we do know that Colorado is that BABIP heaven. And in the past, Willie's had last year's BABIP 286, 315, 328, 288. It's been on the lower side for the most part. So we could see a nice boost in batting average more than that in steals, I'd imagine, in Colorado.
Yep. I think the biggest question will be what color is that light? How green is that light? We won't know that, but big upgrade.
Big upgrade. All right, that wraps up the news and notes. Been kind of nice back-to-back episodes. We actually had something to talk about for once, so that was a plus. But now we have outfield preview part one, Ryan. We're going to talk about the top 30 outfielders according to ADP. So what are we looking at on the wonderful Bloom board in front of us?
Yep. So top 30 outfielders by preseason ADP on the NFBC over the last month, along with aggregated projections from four different projection systems that are publicly available on Fangraphs to get our color-coded batting average homers and steals from Oregon Duck Green to Indiana Hoosier Red. Maybe it's Miami Hurricane Green this week until Monday, down to Indiana Hoosier Red. In terms of general takeaways, I think the biggest thing that I want to kind of convey to you all is just, for me, it's tough to calibrate from like going from an infield position to outfield, where you have to have five of these guys, at least in standard leagues. I mean, I think where I'll take this to start is Teoscar Hernandez is the number 30 outfielder by ADP, and he's pick 140. So yep. In general, if you're in a 15-team league, try to plan for two outfielders in your first 10 rounds, like in your first 150 picks. If you're in a 12-teamer, it's 2.5. So 2 to 3 outfielders in your first 10 picks. And so that's kind of the way that I try and figure out, like, what's the market saying on, because there is that, it's the same kind of shortstop problem, right? There's a lot of talent, especially up top at outfield, but they go so fast because you need so many of them. Just kind of plan for that in your head. 2 to 3 outfielders in your first 10 rounds for 12s, and then 2 in 15 teamers.
And also with the outfield, there's so much more platooning now that these earlier guys are even more important because they're,
that's a more, trend, yeah, for
more
sure.
More often than not going to be regulars in that lineup. So it's another reason why I remember last year, and we'll see how it pans out through these three preview shows we do, but it was the kind of final takeaway was, okay, from preview one, you want at least two. Preview two, you want at least two, and you want to only have to be responsible for one potentially on the last one, if possible, in a 15-teamer. So maybe you don't even want one of the last ones if you can avoid it type situation, but you do have to fill out the positions as you draft, so you can't just – completely ignore it. But to Ryan's point about wanting two here, because yeah, ADP 140, we do other positions, we're past 300 on these sheets, so yep. Big difference from what's going on here.
Yep.
And as you'd expect from these elite talents, if we're talking picks in the top 140, lots of green on these boards. They'll get a lot redder in the coming days as we talk, so kind of take that with a grain of salt as well. It's not your normal like slow progression from green to red on the same sheet. Most of these guys are going to give you five categories, you'd hope, early on. Another reason to take two of them. So just another, when you look at the board, it's like, yeah, most of these guys are hitting 25-plus home runs. Most of them are stealing double-digit bases, and most of them are hitting over 250. So that's just par for the course as well.
One thing I'll add, and we'll get into player-specific stuff in a bit. There's a little bit of looking at the cream of the crop here. There are eight outfielders going in the top 20. That ends with Jackson Churio at pick 20. And then there's PCA and James Wood, who I'm about both. And then there's a 30-pick gap down to Wyatt Langford, who is outfield number 15. So just know that there is kind of a clear top eight at outfield if you decide to go grab. And they're all five-category studs, I guess. I should say except Judge, but what Judge doesn't give you in stolen bases – compared to the rest of the top eight, yeah. My man more than makes up for it elsewhere. So just know that there is kind of a cliff after the top eight, at least in terms of market price at outfield right now.
Yeah, you mentioned that top eight and then the top 20 picks. It's crazy because it feels like shortstop had like seven in the top 30. So 15 and like half the picks are shortstops or outfielders out the gate, which says a lot to what. Yeah, but it just emphasizes the need to attack the position the best you can or have a heck of a game plan to make up for it elsewhere. Mm-hmm. Those are your studs on the rosters, and there's a reason they go early when you really start piecing it all together preview by preview. Anything else on this wonderful board? Because it's like you said, Judge, there's only 5, 6, 7, 8 of the top 30 projected for less than 10 stolen base, or no, 7, because Anthony gets 10. So steals galore, I would say. Power, pretty abundant. The lowest projected 16 for Jaren Duran. So yeah, pretty good stuff.
Somewhat interesting is, and it all depends on what you do with kind of your cutoffs. And batting average is such a, there's so much variance in the category anyway. It is interesting, out of the top 30 outfielders, only two of them are projected to hit over 280. That's Aaron Judge at 291, Ronald Acuna at 282. Now, there are a ton projected in the 270s and more in 260s, but that does, for as loaded of a position as outfield is, batting average is the scarcest category that's available to you of the five in, you know, in 5x5 roto leagues. So that was at least interesting, that batting average, again, only two guys projected over 280 in the entire top 30 here.
Just kind of shows you that the whole realm of baseball batting average is going down. It's just the reality of the situation. Was league average like two? So it's like 245 or something now. It's cratering at times. So something to keep in mind as well. Any other thoughts before we start getting into player analysis?
No, I'm running out of thoughts for the week, man. Running out of thoughts.
It's good. It's good. So what we're going to do, a little different at the outfield position, since we're going to have three previews, we're going to talk at least 90 players here. We're going to just do chunks of five. We're not going to go individual here in the top 10. That'd be kind of silly. So we'll start with the top five, ADP 2 through 11. These are all first rounders in your draft, even in 12s. Aaron Judge, Juan Soto, Ronald Acuna Jr., Corbin Carroll, and Julio Rodriguez. Ryan, you can hit this up however you'd like, but it's the elite of the elite, as you would expect. And there's a lot of, it feels like, moving and shaking with that Acuna, Carroll, J-Rod, and we'll go down a little farther eventually. But like outside of the top four or five that are pretty much locked in, and they throw J-Ram in there at five, the next grouping gets mixed up a lot in drafts, it feels like.
Yeah, and actually Kyle Tucker may join this grouping after a couple of weeks of drafting. But what I generally try and like to do, especially in snake drafts or in really auctions too, it's such a high dollar pick. I'm just trying to poke holes in some of these guys. We know they're all good, but who are you least comfortable drafting in the first round out of Judge, Soto, Acuna, Carroll, and Julio? I think the obvious answer is Ronald Acuna, just because of the unknowns, probably the lowest floor, highest ceiling of this five. And Acuna's going at pick 7, which I think is totally fine. It's just a wider range of outcomes than the others. I actually wonder, I don't know if this is a hot take, but we're trying to poke holes in these guys. I wonder if Juan Soto isn't the, I don't say riskiest, is one where I'm just like, I don't know. There's Juan Soto. It's all about the stolen bases for Juan Soto. I mean, he had 38 last year, did not have a season over 12 in each of the previous five. So like if Juan Soto only, you know, goes back to stealing 10 bags, he's not even close to a top five pick. If Juan Soto goes to 38 again, he's a bargain at 4. So for as much as though there's a wide range of outcomes for Acuna, I would argue there is for Juan Soto as well.
Yeah, that's one reason why with Soto, like, talent's undeniable. That's pretty simple, but I don't trust the steals. Like, even if he reverts back to 20, these other guys take a jump over him, is what it feels like to me. It's why I've made the argument that I'd take J-Ram over Soto. And I typically would too.
Yeah.
But I get other people looking at me like I'm crazy. Like, everyone thinks it's Soto for sure at 4. And again, it's poking holes. Like you said, if someone wants to take him at 4, I'm not going to tell you you're stupid for it. Like, I get it. I totally understand why you would take Soto there. But if you're poking holes, like, the stolen base is a pretty clear spot to focus on. And let's not also like forget the fact, if we are going to poke holes, 263, 288 is good, 275, 242. So two of the last four seasons, he hasn't even had an average that you'd want compared to these other guys up here, is what I'm trying to say. So, again, poking holes at the situation. Mm-hmm. But Soto's a beast. No Big Meat Pete the Polar Bear anymore. No Kyle Tucker, who they thought they were getting. the lineup's a little different there. So, yeah, it's a very, very fair point with Soto. And I'm glad you started the argument before I did, because I think I've passed him, I think, every time I've had a chance to take him so far. Don't feel great about it.
Yeah, don't no, I don't. About it, right, I'm not trying to like. I'm just trying to, you know, I don't want to say poke holes for the eighth time, but just show potential downsides for some of these guys, which is what you have to do in the first round. the projection that we're seeing for stolen bases for Soto is 19. That's the hedge, right? That's pretty much like if you're just going to play 50-50 game, you're at 19 steals. And if you get 19, for me, Juan Soto comes out as the number four hitter in baseball. So like there is, you know, if he gets 20, there you go. You have your pick here. But I just think, you know, what if it goes back to 10? And then I know what if it stays at in the 30s. I get it. Yep. So
no, he's a beast. My guy I'm always in love with, and I'm willing to go earlier, is Corbin Carroll. I'm just a pure believer in Corbin Carroll. I know I'm probably higher than not all, but a lot on Corbin Carroll, especially in this range, because we're talking about elite talents. But for me, it's like he's going to be 25 this year. He went 31, 32 last year, hitting 260. Another year removed from the shoulder injury. Like, who's to say he can't steal 40 bags and still hit 30 home runs and hit for, like, there's so many levels to Corbin Carroll. Plus, he's had over 100 runs in three straight years. Like, I think he's an absolute monster that has a ceiling we might not have seen yet, is why I think he could be another one to go for here.
Yeah, I've got Carroll as my number two outfielder, so I agree with you. I would take Carroll over Soto. Carroll, J-Rams, tough, but yeah, I'm with you. In the forecaster, we put an upside of 40 home runs on Corbin Carroll, and he has stolen 32, 35, and 54 bases the last three seasons as well. So you could argue just as good of a shot as like Acuna as being the number one player in fantasy. Yep.
Exactly. So it's kind of nice. And like this could lead into a whole KDS discussion at some point by looking at this kind of stuff. Like, do you want to be in the middle or farther back so you get that second round pick sooner type deal, knowing these guys can all give you that first round appeal?
There's a clear top three, right? Because it's Ohtani, Judge, Witt. But then if you can get five or six in KDS, you're assured of Carroll, Soto. You can go Scooble if you want, J-Ram. What have you. So something to consider. The second round probably coming back to you isn't as great as if you waited till the back end of the first, but it's all KDS strategy for sure.
Yes, it is. Anything on your boy J-Rod, who literally is the most consistent guys in this actually whole category up here?
Yeah, for as consistent as he is year over year, the in-season inconsistency is maddening. But so like in head-to-head leagues, for folks out there in head-to-head, you can go through long stretches where J-Rod just isn't that great, and then there are stretches where he is just on fire. So I have nothing on J-Rod. Properly priced, five categories, he's fine.
All right, 6 through 10 is ADP 14 through 34. Our nemesis, Fernando Tatis Jr., the previously mentioned Kyle Tucker, Jackson Churio, PCA, and James Wood. So we're starting to enter a little bit more volatility in this range compared to those early picks, which you'd expect as you slowly go down the board. But you're still paying first or at least second round prices on most of these guys. So where are you looking here?
Yeah, this is quite a bit shakier for me. Kyle Tucker, I think, will probably move up to the first round, maybe around 15, something like that, up from 18. So I think he may graduate from this group. I need to do some soul searching, man. Why don't I like Fernando Tatis?
I never.
Why don't you like Fernando Tatis?
I don't either. I've talked about him before. He is good, but
I've never drafted him ever.
Okay, well, we'll talk about it now then. He is good, but since 2021, when he had the PED season, he's had shoulder injuries. It's been 25-29, which is good, in 141 games. Then he played 102 games. Then 155, where he's 25-32. So he's still good. Like, very good. Doesn't hit for a high average very often, so you're not going to get the average spike. I don't even know if 30 home runs is still there for Tatis. It seemed like last year he had to accumulate because, like, the runs scored is his first season over 100 runs. He's never had over 100 RBIs. So, like, I'm poking holes. If you're a first-round pick, you don't have the 100 RBI upside. You've only had 100 runs twice, and that's because you played 155 games. Like, where are we at with Tatis? Like, all it takes is one IL stint, and he's already not going to meet a lot of the criteria, it seems like. And so that's my trying to put the negative on this situation with Tatis. And yeah, so that's why I usually stay away. Like, at this turn, you can get yourself a Vladito. You can go and get a Tucker. Go get my boy, Frenchie Lindor. Like, there's a lot of stuff there that keeps me off of Fernando Tatis Jr.
And yeah, while you were talking, I looked up in the Razzball Player Rater for last year. Fernando Tatis finished 27th And like you said, he had to compile to get there. It was 691 plate appearances to, I don't want to say only finish 27th. It was a good year, but I feel like that could be a cap for Tatis. So
He's only had 600 plate appearances twice.
I'm fine taking Tatis at the price, honestly, but I don't hate it, but I'm probably not doing it for the reasons you mentioned. I do want to bring up, I gotta go after the youths a little bit. Not so much Jackson Churio, but PCA and James Wood. Specifically James Wood.
Yeah.
I don't get the 34 ADP for James Wood. I mean, I guess I do if you kind of take the first half of James Wood and then you pile on that he's what 22, 23 years old and can move on from there. Projections do not like James Wood. The second half last year from James Wood was terrible. The strikeout rate is abysmal. A ton of ground balls for James Wood. So I don't know if he gets to the projected 25 home runs with all those strikeouts. Projected 259 batting average as a top 40 pick. You've got to have some killer homers and steals to make up for that. And James Wood doesn't have it. That's for, to me, that's my pretty much by far my biggest fade of the top 10, maybe top 15, because there's another youth down there I don't like either. But James Wood to me just kind of sticks out as someone whose price is a little inflated. I won't have James Wood on any teams, I don't think.
Yeah, James Wood is a very, very tricky one. I remember writing him up earlier in the preseason at for the Patreon. He was in one of the Bloom boards you gave me. I'm trying to figure out which one it is so I can talk about it, but I can't find it right now. Because there's so many of them. But he was tough because you saw a guy that the first half, second half splits, as you mentioned, were very, very bad with James Wood. But at the same time, I remember digging into him for the article, and it's like, yeah, the swing and miss was really, really bad, but he was still hitting the ball hard. He was still doing a lot of things you want to see from James Wood. And that makes it like, if he can just somehow rein in that plate discipline, this guy could be an absolute monster. I think that's why people are drafting him here. I probably won't, just because of that trepidation with him. But I get it, is what I'm trying to get at.
I just, for me, I see it's a 39% strikeout rate in the second half for James Wood, and I try not to split out first and second half too much with a lot of these established veterans because you're kind of cherry picking, but I think it's valid for James Wood. Like, obviously did not adjust well to pitchers' adjustments in the second half. I mean, 39% K rate is like truly horrific. So I don't know. It's just too much of a floor for me.
Yeah, no, I get it. I found my James Wood spot here. So basically, in the second half, we saw his batting average go from 278 in the first half to 223. But there was like his fly ball rate, it dropped, but the line drive rate actually went up. So he was still hitting the ball well in that regard. Ground ball rate was still a bit of a concern, but the hard hit, the barrel, like that's what I'm reading now, it was all pretty dang good. It's just that swinging strike rate jumped from 11 to 14.4. And you mentioned the strikeout rate to 39% is not going to cut it when it comes to James.
I mean, is that not O'Neill Cruz? Is that not O'Neill Cruz who's going at one, pick 105?
I still like James Wood better because O'Neill Cruz just hates playing for the Pirates, hates playing baseball, and O'Neill Cruz can be platooned. James Wood is playing.
He is playing. That's true.
So anybody else in this frame? I still love Jackson Churio. I'm still a believer that as young as he is the next Ronald Acuna that we could see out there. So I wouldn't be like one of these days he's going to put it all together. Is it this year where he goes 35-35 or is it down the road? But I think Jackson Churio is an absolute monster.
I'm fine with Churio. And honestly, it's weird. I don't know if I'll click the button. This is a cognitive thing, a gut thing in my head. But like PCA rates out fine at 34 ADP, especially next to James Wood. I'll stop talking about James Wood. But for as bad as PCA was on the surface, Pete Crow Armstrong was on the surface in the second half last year, the skills didn't really change all that much. I just think, despite some batting average issues, I think he does have the power and speed combo to make up for it and has actually shown that for pretty much an entire season. Again, I know the second half was rough, but the skills are better. So I'm actually fine with PCA at the price. I haven't done it yet, but I think that's reasonable.
Yeah, I haven't done it either, but like you said, like I've looked at them more this offseason. The final line, which is all we care about in Roto, was still very good, even though he stunk in the second half. But maybe adjustments can be made. 11 through 15, it's ADP 51 through 80. We have Wyatt Langford, Brent Rooker, Roman Anthony, Jackson Merrill, and Riley Green. This is a pocket that I have been pretty much avoided so far. I don't know if it was on purpose or the way I was drafting, but I haven't been too interested in this whole range.
Brent Rooker is actually one of my favorite buys out of definitely of this group. And I agree with you. Outside of Brent Rooker, to me, it's not a place I'm going. But Brent Rooker projects out to be much better than his 56 ADP. I think you've got 40 home run power with 260, 270 batting average. Like, yes, it's not going to come with the steals, but you still get a few. Probably get 5 to 10 from Brent Rooker. You can live with that. It's not a zero. I just think the raw power is massive. The park is excellent. The lineup should be pretty damn good in Sacramento. So Brent Rooker, I do want to call out. I didn't think, because I think this is like a career high ADP for Brent Rooker.
Yes, and
normally I'm not
weird seeing him here.
It does. Normally I'm like, if it's the highest price someone's ever been, but to me, it's been kind of a consistent improvement for Brent Rooker over a couple of seasons. And I think he comes out at 56. I would much rather Brent Rooker than I do keep piling on these kids, but then Wyatt Langford or Roman Anthony. I'll let you talk.
No, I want nothing to do with Roman Anthony either. No. So that's fine.
What is he doing here?
Yeah, he's there just because of name value. That's all that is. I'm gonna talk about Wyatt Langford though. Like I'm still fine with Wyatt Langford. I get the concern that the oblique injuries. I think it might be he just came back too soon. That's what it came down to. Like, he had that one in spring training, and it just seemed like he was constantly battling that the whole season. Like, it never really happened. And so I'm going to kind of give a grain of salt. Like, maybe the whole offseason can help these things. Let's throw that out there. Maybe not. Maybe we find out it's silly. But, like, even with all the injuries, he played 134 games, went 22-22. With 73 runs and 62 RBIs. Like, that's still, that 22-22 stands out to me in a big way with what took place. In his rookie season, he went 18-19 in 134 games as well. Batting average might never be his friend, 253, 241, but it's also low BABIPs, much lower than he ever had in the minor league. So it could be, you know, he's going to be 24, also super young. So a healthy Wyatt Langford's a 30-30 player. Now, healthy is the question. But if he goes 30-30, like, this 51's a gift. Like, we just talked about a bunch of guys ahead of him. In this whole pocket, he's the only guy projected to get over 10 stolen bases. You start to see a kind of a – it's not a cliff, but a lot fewer 20-plus steal guys as we go down this list.
Yeah.
Wyatt Langford, a hurt Langford is 20-20. I think a healthy guy, we're talking 30-30. And this time next year, we might be talking about – because last year he was going around Cheerio. Like – I don't think the fall should be that dramatic. He should be at least in the PCA realm. So Wyatt Langford to me is a guy that if you're looking for an outfielder, if you waited on outfielder or something, like, this is a good spot to land on to at least give you a nice base.
And Michael Chasko in the chat says Wyatt Langford's 253 batting average seems low to him. So potentially some room for improvement there. Could I interest you? I don't know. Could I interest you in a Langford Rooker? Your bet.
You could.
You like Rooker, though.
I was going to ask you about him, because what surprised me about you saying that, like, I get the 40 home runs. That's tremendous. Like, if I don't go my normal power hitting first baseman or something early on, Rooker fits that mold perfectly. But my question for you is, we've talked about it in other positions, are you willing to have one of your first outfielders not be a stolen base guy?
Yeah, no, that's the issue.
That's what I was kind of surprised. Not that Rooker's not good. Not that I agree he's got 40 home run appeal. I agree with everything you said. But to already be sitting back going, okay, now I got to make up for stolen bases as the draft goes on. I guess, obviously, if you take someone else earlier.
Yeah, it all depends. Yes, you would need to be pretty confident in stolen bases with your first few picks, or have some middle round stolen base guys that you really like and just plan for it. No, that's fair on Brent Rooker for sure. Yeah,
that was my only thing. Like, otherwise I agree he's an absolute monster. And I think the biggest thing is, besides the no steals, is like you said, it his ADP at 56, that just stands out like, holy wow, like we're not used to that from Brent Rooker.
It's so, yeah, it's not no steals though. I will say it's, I mean, seven steals, it's ain't not, nothing, man. Yeah. It ain't nothing. Yeah,
he steals bases like a catcher, so there you go. Anybody else this range? Because I got no Anthony, no Merrill. Green, I can understand, but I'm still like, yeah, probably not.
Yeah, Roman Anthony for me, I'm out on. I need to actually see it. 63. Like, I like Roman Anthony. I don't like the price. Jackson Merrill, just the fact that he did not run at all and very much could have been injury related there, but just one stolen base in 483 plate appearances last season. I know there was all kinds of injuries. I'm just not willing to bank on all of that coming back at a top 80 price. It's just too expensive for me. I've actually taken Riley Green kind of like a Brent Rooker light, but maybe the same as Brent Rooker. I don't know.
That's very true.
A couple rounds later. So I've actually taken Riley Green in a couple spots for the similar reasons as Rooker's. Like, yeah, I need to be good in stolen bases, but it's a good power bat with a batting average that's not going to hurt you. That is valuable.
No, and it's a good point, because we, after every season ends, we say it, everybody says it, where did I hurt? It was power. I hurt in power. Well, these guys can help you in power. You can at least try to find steals on the waiver wire. Like, if worse came to worse, you still have, you know, 20 more picks, 25 more picks after this. But so I get it. That's why I'm not completely out on Green, especially ADP 80. You should have a good idea how your team looks like starting out by then to see if you can make that work. Mr. Arbenchin says, I apologize. I hate that we have all these ats on here. He says, I feel like the other positions from 50 to 100 ADP are usually more appealing than these outfielders, probably grabbing a couple pitchers, an old bat, or even a CI in there. That's the other part where I probably don't have a lot of these guys. That's the biggest part. That's why I love doing these previews, because then we'll do pockets of ADP and it becomes even clearer of why we're not taking certain players.
It's a good observation. It's a kind of a draft mapping exercise that I think everyone should do. Know where you like certain positions and where you don't like and where you want to go elsewhere. Because I generally agree, like ADP 50 to 100. Yeah. There are a lot of other options that you can go with. The risk in doing that, though, is what if you don't get one of those top outfielders? You don't get an outfielder at 50 to 100 ADP. You're starting to fall behind. And again, you need to get those five slots. So again, just be aware of it. That's fine. You can take two outfielders from 100 to 140 if you like that pocket better. But that's just a really good remark and kind of an exercise I know that we like to do. We do those pockets of ADP episodes and kind of 50 pick increments comparing across positions. And it really shines out that way too. So I like that call.
Yeah, because just a quick glance at the ADP, like in this 50 to 100, it's a lot of your elite catchers, your closers, and your SP1s if you didn't take an early one. Yep. So, like, there's a reason this is the way I don't have a lot of guys in this range.
I am taking an SP1, SP2, a top closer over Roman Anthony or Jackson Merrill every single draft.
Yep. All right, 16 through 20, he goes ADP 81 through 99. So, a nice tight pocket here. Jaron Duran, Byron Buxton, Cody Bellinger, Tyler Soderstrom, Michael Harris II just squeezes inside that top 100. I'll give you the floor, Ryan. I actually like this range quite a bit if you're looking for your second outfielder, if you didn't go really aggressive on him.
I guess. But I mean, you're not drafting Buxton, are you? The price?
Probably not. Probably I could see myself doing it in a 12.
Yeah, Buxton needs, let me play the game here. Buxton comes out about par value at 540 plate appearances. He returns his ADP. So again, just according to the projections that I'm using, but roughly around 540 for Byron Buxton to get back to that ADP, that price that he's going. I always like Jaron Duran. Probably a little bit too much, but I think you can get stolen bases here and not hurt yourself really in any other category. Like, yeah, 16 home runs is a little bit light. And going back to our pole hitter episode with Rob DiPietro, Jaron Duran is one of those guys who does not pull many barrels. So you'll see a good barrel rate, but a lot of those are going the other way off the monster. Maybe that changes if Jaron Duran gets traded in a different park, but I don't see the home runs going much over 20, but you can get, I take the over on 23 steals, and I think you get a really good batting average from Jaron Duran with a ton of runs he compiles. So I like the price at 81 for Jaron Duran. Buxton, again, I don't want to just like, I'm being so close-minded and say, oh, I'm not going to take Buxton. I would take the under on 540 plate appearances. Just nine times out of 10, he hasn't gotten there.
What would make you want to do that?
What?
Take
the under?
Yeah. I'm joking.
Yeah, just, that he's done it once, twice. I don't know how many times. Bellinger, I need to see where he signs. I love Bellinger at the price at 91. If he re-signs with the Yankees, still a possibility, but I don't know yet. I don't know. I'll let you go after that.
Well, I was going to say on Duran, I'm fully with you. Like last year, I wanted nothing to do with the second round, Jaren Duran. At ADP 81, I'm all aboard because this is one of the like 30 plus steals, like is very much in the cards. As you were talking about there, the runs should be tremendous with him. You get 15 to 20 homers. That's not nothing at all. And I think the average will take a nice bounce back. He's been a pretty good BABIP guy throughout his early career. And it was 326 last year, still good, but that's down from what he's used to doing. So I think there is definitely a bounce back opportunity there for Jaren Duran to pick things up. Hopefully he gets back to the top of the order. That's also a part of the puzzle with this, or he gets traded to what you were saying. But yeah, I like Duran quite a bit. Buxton's a 12 team play for me. Belly needs to find a home. I usually just don't take Belly at all. And right now I saw a report. It's the Cubs and Cubs and Yankees that are battling for him at this point in time. So we'll see where that goes. But I got to ask you, Michael Harris II, who I have a few shares of this year, because this ADP is quite tempting. As much crap as I give you, because we're friends. That's kind of what I do. But also, I give Michael Harris. I can't deny the fact that last year he played 160 games, so he actually played a full season. But 2020, he's had at least 20 steals in 3 out of 4 years. He's had the 16 or more home runs. And 249 was his lowest batting average. So I'm trying to give you your flowers without completely telling you it's a great pick.
Yeah, I actually think, like, crazy turn of events, you might be higher on Michael Harris this year than I am.
I think a lot of it's because I like the batting average at that point in time. It starts to drop off quickly. So to get 2020 with a good batting average is much more intriguing to me than it used to be.
If he gets there, Michael Harris did hit 249 last year. So the projection here, and I think I generally agree with it. I think 270.
Well, like I said, last year was the worst he's had in his career. Like that was a big downfall. So
I know, still in 2020. So
massive BABIP downfall last year too.
Yeah. No, I think the batting average rebound is fine. Michael Harris for me projects out above ADP. So I like it. I just like the fact that it's balanced. I just think from a team build standpoint, it's good to have, I guess, call it modest five category production, probably better than modest. If you go 2020 with a 270 batting average, it's a big unbalance when you're trying to draft teams. And Michael Harris is like the most balanced guy out here, at least on the right half of our Bloom board, which is outfield 15 or 16 through 30. Balance for me is big and consistency for similar to like Julio Rodriguez light. For as inconsistent as Michael Harris is throughout a season, look at his year-end homers and steals pretty much his entire career in Atlanta. It's been good. I hope he can be at least passable against lefties. I think there's some platoon risk there, but the defense is pretty damn good. So I think that's pretty light at this point in Michael Harris's career. So I'm with you.
Real quick, I'll throw a listener question there because it pertains to now. Michael Chasco says, where would Bellinger end up if he signs with the Mets or the Cubs?
I need to look at those park factors, but I think he'd probably be, for me, I'd probably drop him below Harris, Arozarena, Seiya Suzuki, George Springer, that group that's going after Bellinger right now. If Bellinger signs with the Yankees, I think he's up there with Duran, Riley Green. Yeah, I think he moves up around for that.
All righty, let's head 21 through 25, ADP 100 through 123. Randy Arozarena, who joined the squad last night in the auction, Seiya Suzuki, your guy George Springer, yeah, O'Neill Cruz, and Jose Altuve, who was on your team last night. So I like Randy a lot. So that's not news for anybody. What are your thoughts on this range?
Solid range. Love Randy. Love Seiya Suzuki. Love George Springer. And I'm fine with Altuve. So this is a nice for as much as I don't like kind of 50 through 100. There's a couple spots I do. If I wait on outfield and need an outfield one, this is definitely kind of the point of no return for me. I need to get one of these guys. It's what I did last night with George Springer. I was getting nervous. He was my first outfielder taken in the auction. And if you want to go early for outfield two, fine spot to do it. I like, I really like the values on a Rosarena, Seiya, and Springer.
Yeah, no, I like them all. There's lots of floor in these plays. Randy, I just love because it's a consistent 20-20, 30-30 upside. We saw the 30-30 recently. Batting average is always a concern with Randy, so you got to bake that in, but that power speed is pretty nice.
It's Seiya's weird, Randy? I mean, what was his ADP last year? Like, it wasn't that, like, he hasn't moved up that much.
No, he's just hanging out.
He had almost 30-30 season. I don't get it.
The batting average just keeps everybody away from him. Seiya, I love to go right back to another one of the Babbitt fallers last year that dropped his average to 245 after three straight solid years, two back-to-back 283, 285 years. We know he's got 20-plus homers. He did 32 last year. First year, he's played over 138 games, so that was a plus. Looks like steals might not be a thing, but you get a full season out of him. You got the potential for 30-plus homers, 100-plus RBIs, and hopefully the batting average treks back up to the 270, 280 range. Like, that's a heck of a bat right there. Now, it doesn't get you the steals, but I'll throw this back to you. Yeah, Brent Rooker's got that 40 home run appeal, but Rooker at 56 or Seiya at 101.
It's a good question. And I can't even say both because then you're really behind at steals and outfield.
Yeah, that's why it's one or the other.
Honestly, probably Rooker. I just really like Rooker. But it's a fair comparison.
All right. Then George Springer, we know your thoughts there. I'm fully out on O'Neill Cruz. I'm fine being wrong with that, even though it's like the same projection of Randy Rosarena and everything. As the girls say, the guy gives them the ick. O'Neill Cruz gives me the ick, and I just want nothing to do with him on my fantasy teams.
I wouldn't know. I'd never got that line, Bubba. That must be a you problem.
I get it from TV. Never mind. I was going to have a bad joke right there. I'm going to stop right there. It's filter. See, this is called growth, people. But Altuve, my question on Altuve, we saw the stolen bases drop tremendously last year. I did record my Houston Astros preview that comes out on Friday with Armchair Roto. He's concerned about the steals as well. Sure. Where are you at? You took him last night. Are you still good with Altuve? He's going to be 35. Yeah. Like, he's still very, like, the floor is nice, but it's slowing down.
Oh, for sure. And speed is, we have seen speed is the first thing to go. And I just hope it stays at 10. I'm probably taking the under on 13 steals, which is the projection that we're showing here on the board. But I'm probably taking the over on both a 260 batting average and 21 home runs. I think Jose Altuve is still a 290 hitter. This is the same strikeout rate. Fewer line drives last year, few more fly balls, which is how Jose Altuve got the 26 bombs last year. But the BABIP was really low for Jose Altuve and his baseline. So I think you're getting someone maybe like 270s batting average with low 20s home runs and 10 steals. I think that's fine. And second base outfield eligible is nothing to sneeze at either. It doesn't give me the ick, as they say.
Let's give you the ick, as they say. You're welcome. Colson Montgomery should give you the ick. 26 through 30, ADP 126 through 140. You got Joe Adell, Lou Bob, Sedane Rafaela, Noelvi Marte, Teoscar Hernandez. This is a world of endless possibilities and complete, like, this is a low floor, high ceiling pocket, right?
Yeah, here. I feel like this is kind of a, at least even though the ADPs are close ish. This is, to me, a drop-off. I think there's many more questions with this group than the previous five that we just talked about with the Rosarena, Seiya, Springer, and Altuve. Burks makes a good point, a rare good point in the chat, that Sidney Rafaela is going 49 spots after Jaron Duran, but the projections look very similar, minus 8 points in average. Plus, you get double eligibility there with Zidane Rafaela. So if you believe in that, that, I mean, my retort to that would be Jaren Duran has actually done it and done it quite well in the majors before Rafaela. And Rafaela is younger, hasn't had the chance to do it. So I get it. But you can make that argument for Rafaela. We talked about Noelvi Marte in the third base episode. I'm not there at third base, so I'm also not there at outfield. Teoscar is my favorite one. Again, to the surprise of no one, Shocker. The oldest in this group is, look at that, dude. 260, 29 homers, 7 steals in LA. That's sick. That's Seiya. That's better than Seiya going 40 picks later, man.
Yeah, I'll take Seiya on this one still. But
at the price? Yeah,
I have no problem with Teoscar. I have zero problem with Teoscar. I think Seiya's got the higher ceiling because Teoscar is showing his age a little bit.
Might like hit ninth, dude.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, there might be more days off available on that team when the softball roster shows up into town.
Yeah.
So let's not get overly excited on that one. I do like Teoscar, though. Zidane, Burks, I think you make lots of great points. Don't listen to Ryan. But, yeah, Zidane is a kind of – again, this is a lot of high floor, low floor, high ceiling plays. I think Rafaela, we could see a 20 plus homer, almost 30 steal guy there in reality. Like, we really could. He's going to hit at the bottom of the order, which is a bit of a downside to this situation with some of these players. So there's that. Lubov, you were actually in on the bidding last night, which shocked me. But yeah, I love it. If he could hit 240, I'd be over the moon. That would be great. It's Joe Adell, who I still absolutely love. Yeah, the batting average is suspect. There's no denying that. But if we can get back to the 11, 15 plus, somewhere in that range of steals, like the projections have 11, if he could sneak into the 15 plus range, he's another 40 plus home run guy. Like, this is Brent Rooker light to me. I love Joe Adell. The barrel rate up to 17% last year took a massive jump. Ben and I talked about him on the Oopsie show we did today. Really interesting because Oopsie loves him. They got him for 34 homers, 12 steals, hitting 250. You give me a 250 average, and that's over 146 games. You give me 250 for Joe Adell, I think we're getting to 40 home runs. And I think you're approaching 100 RBIs. Like, there's a lot to like about Joe Adell there. So,
he had 98 last year. So,
yeah. So, Joe Adell, I think at 126, he's one of those potential ceiling plays I like a lot right here, especially if you're, you know, we're not to round 10 yet. It's like round, what, 8, give or take. You have an idea of what your power is starting to look like because you're not going to find a lot more as it goes on. This is a great one of your last shots at a big monster power guy.
Yeah. I mean, so I'll do the glass half empty with Joe Adell. I'm not buying 11 stolen bases that we're showing on the projection. He only attempted 6 all of last season in 570 plate appearances. So you combine that with what will probably be another low batting average. There's a risk here that you've got a 2.5 category player, which, again, if you need power, that works. But I'm always hesitant to go for those. I don't want to call them power only yet. Joe Adell is could still be more than that. But I think there's the batting average risk is real. And I think the stolen bases, like, oopsie, 12 steals. I don't know. Only 5 last year on 6 attempts all season. So there's risk that this becomes a power only type play with a ton of RBIs, like you said.
Yeah, I'm just wondering with Adell, like last year, I'm looking at his injuries. He suffered a hip injury on March 29th. I'm wondering if that hindered things because we saw 15 steals the year before. And I'm wondering if that hip injury kind of lingered and held things back throughout the season.
Or was just a team thing, right? Remember, the Angels ran wild 2 years ago and then as a team did not run last season. True. So it's a wild. I mean, dude, would it surprise you if Joe Adell steals 25 bases next year?
No. Joe Adell could be like a 40 home run, 25 steal guy hitting 250, and we're just looking at this going, wow, his ADP was 126. Like, so that's what I'm saying. There's a low floor, high ceiling in this range for most of these guys. Like, yeah, Lubov could do the same thing. Like, he could be a 30-40 guy if he could just hit 250. Like, there's some very intriguing options here.
Yep. I can't believe it. Within a 2-minute span, I said Joe Adell isn't going to steal 5 bases, and then I said he could steal 25. But that's stolen bases, man. That's the category. It's so freaking – it's just wild.
Yes. Like, for the most part, we know who guys are, but there's a group of flukiness. Like, we started with Soto. Is he going to do it? We saw Josh Naylor out of nowhere. Like, there's guys a couple years ago, Matt Chapman just showed up. Willie Adama, like, it just changes all over the place. And coaches change, players change. Because that's the other thing with Joe Adell. The dude's only 27 this year. Seems like he's been playing forever. He's still quite young. So, like, we have not seen the best of Joe Adell yet. And I'm pretty excited about that.
We've seen a lot of plate appearances of Joe Adell, though.
Not consistently and not healthy. So we have not seen the best of Joe Adell. Mm. All right. Let's see what Michael has to say here in the chat. Is there a player on this list that can be dropped if he gets off to a slow start and you can take advantage of impatient managers?
So it's actually interesting because Spore is in the chat too and mentioned this when we were talking about Michael Harris. Probably more of a 12-team comment, I think. I don't want to speak for Paul, but one of the problems with Harris's late season rebounds the last 2 years is they came on other people's teams because there is a risk that you drop Michael Harris at some point. So for me, the biggest likelihood to be dropped be Noel V. Marte.
That's fair too.
I could see him just getting off to a bad start. There's a Christian Encarnacion Strand's doing things. There's other bodies in Cincinnati that Marte's in AAA. I'll do that.
The other guy besides O'Neal Cruz for me is Tyler Soderstrom. I know some people very people are very, very high on Soderstrom. Kid made a gigantic leap this last year. Not going to knock that, but like we're looking at all these different guys in this range. His projection is 257, 25, and 5. Like in reality, that's nothing that just jumps out to you compared to inside a top 100 pick, if that makes sense. So a little slump and things could change rapidly there.
I want to like Tyler Soderstrom so much, but I can't. If there's anyone that doesn't need to hit the ball on the ground 50% of the time, it's Tyler Soderstrom. You need the launching, you need the bat path tweak, the change, whatever it is, to at least unlock more fantasy value from Soderstrom.
And to be fair, he had his massive down, like rough patch last year is when they moved him off of first base to the outfield when Nick Kurtz came off. It took Soderstrom a while to get comfortable again.
True.
Yep. That was a big part of it. So, yeah, I'm not knocking him. I could see it happening, but he'd be another guy to keep in mind for me.
Our guy, TDK, Marte could lose at bats first. Going to be on the same page with TDK. Michael posits his own answer to his question. I could see someone moving on from Buxton to that would be more
when he hits the IL.
Yeah, if Brian Buxton's out for 6 weeks, 2 months in May, what's the decision there type deal?
Yes, indeed. All right, let's take some show questions here from the Discord. We've got John Wilder says, I know Anthony has upside, but if you just look at the projections, he isn't worth a top 10 round pick, right? I agree.
Top 10 round pick.
So inside the 150.
Yeah, outside the 150.
I think that's fair if you look at this whole list. Yeah,
no, it's fair. The projections don't like Roman Anthony. I talked about Soderstrom's 50% ground ball rate. That's same with Roman Anthony. Got to elevate. Hits the crap out of the ball. I get that, but strikeout rate was pretty high. At some point, Roman Anthony will be very good. Mm-hmm. I just think the market's paying for that to happen in 2026. And I just think that's a risky move at the price.
Agreed. This genius named Papa Bloom in the chat says Riley Green and Teoscar have the same projection 60 picks apart. Look at him picking things up at 10-15 on the best coast.
Yeah, good. I can't even pick it up. Where's Riley? Oh, they're next to each other at the bottom.
Yep. 60 picks apart. Look at him.
Astute observation.
Yep. All right.
Someone in the chat, Chikini, I think. Yeah, he doesn't buy the Teoscar projection. Again, these are just projections. You can agree, disagree with them. It is four of them combined, so it's there's nothing crazy here, but that's the counter, I guess, if you just don't like Teoscar's projection.
BP says, I'm usually critical of projections for being too low, but are they too optimistic for O'Neal Cruz? He is incapable of hitting left-handed pitching. I agree. I think it's going to cut into his playing time or his production or both.
The counter argument is yes, both can be true though. I think O'Neal Cruz can hit 23 home runs and 27 steals and still suck against lefties and play partially. He's that talented.
Yeah, I guess so. Smokey Joe says, I was going to say the same thing for Lou Bob, basically PCA 90 picks later.
I mean, dude, O'Neill Cruz last year, I'm not letting you get off that easy. 38 steals, 20 home runs, and 550 plate appearances. He did this last year. He did better than this last year. So,
He did.
I don't know why I'm going to bat for O'Neill Cruz, but.
Yeah, in the second half, he had 164 at-bats. In the first half, he had 307, so a massive drop-off there. Only played 50 games. He had 212 in the first half, 17. Holy shit, this is bad.
It was bad.
He hit 102 versus lefties last year. 102. That is horrific. He struck out 35% of the time versus lefties. He had a 400 OPS and a .74 ISO versus lefties. That's going to be tough to stay on the field.
Agree. I'll shut up.
Smokey Joe says, I was going to say the same thing for Lou Bob, basically PCA 90 picks later. Do you agree with that statement?
No, there's, I think, a pretty low floor with Lou Bob if he does not get traded. I mean, it's been a low batting average, like really low batting average for a couple of years. Like, I don't think PCA hits 220, 230. So No, I don't necessarily buy that. I think the increase in cost is, well, I don't know the word, is deserved for BCA. Fumbled that sentence.
Yes, you're all good. Matt says, for some reason, I group Elliot Ramos, Andy Páez, and William Abreu together. Any preference? Those will be on future shows. We can answer that now. Ryan, I'll let you go first. Ramos, yeah. Páez, Abreu.
I would probably go Páez, Ramos, Abreu.
That's where I'm at. But Abreu is tempting. If they start to actually play him regularly, he might jump Ramos for me.
And Páez probably will hit like eighth, him and Edmund, eighth and ninth.
It's still five at-bats a game.
Still going to have five at-bats a game.
Yeah, it doesn't freaking matter. Like, the Dodgers don't count when we talk bottom of the order. And when they're up 12 runs, he still plays.
Yeah, because they're going to rest Freddie.
When the third string second baseman is pitching for the other team, Páez will still get an at-bat.
That's true. That's actually a good point. The leader in home runs off of position players pitching may go to Andy Páez, because they're going to rest the olds. They're going to rest Mookie. They're going to rest Teoscar. They're going to rest Freddie. They can't rest everybody.
But they'll rotate it. That's 40 chests, Bubba. On that list. Yeah, you're welcome. I'm here for it. Caveman stuff. All right, Andy Splinter says, don't need to save it for the questions part, but he says the effing Dodgers, really. Yeah, no, we all feel you, buddy. Mailman Mike says, Soderstrom seems higher on the list. Is that because he's being drafted more at first base? I don't think so. I think he's got the eligibility, but I feel like it's an outfield thing to me, but I could be wrong.
I just think the flexibility to have both is probably that pushing him up a little bit. Maybe a round or something like that. It's just nice to be able to move Soderstrom around later on in the draft, depending on what you like at either outfield or first base. But in a vacuum, when I look at Soderstrom, I'm taking Harris, Arozarena, Suzuki, Springer, all of whom are going right after Soderstrom, maybe pretty much every time.
And Suzuki's got a very similar projection, three picks apart. Like, it's a better projection, very similar projection. So Soderstrom's in the right realm of what's going on. Nails says, how do you guys feel about Soto's stolen base projections? Obviously last year would be a major outlier, and if he doesn't run in 2026, I have a hard time justifying the number 4 overall pick. We agree.
Yeah, we kind of said that exactly.
We nailed that thing out the gate.
I don't really have much to add. I mean, the projection, like I said earlier, it's gonna head just in the middle. That's what it should do. You could make the case that it was a new team for Soto last year, and maybe they just keep running him. And now Alonso is gone, so maybe you need to produce a few more runs. I don't know, but just throwing it out there that Soto is not a slam dunk top 5, still very talented.
Yes, very, very talented. All right, let's wrap this bad boy up. Thoughts on the top 30 at the position?
I would, in an ideal world, I would love to grab one of those top 6 or 7, depending, if I have an early first round pick or if I'm near the back end. I love starts where you can get an early shortstop / outfielder, and there are plenty of opportunities to do that at both positions, and then you're set up very nicely in five categories there. I don't like roughly picks like 30 to 80 outside of like Brent Rooker. So to me, that's where I'm going elsewhere, similar to the comment earlier. I'm grabbing a closer. I'm grabbing an SP1, those types of players. I'm staying away from outfield, and I'm probably going back in around pick 100 just because I really like that pocket of players going right around 100. So that's my general plan after talking through this board with you this evening.
Yeah, I'm with you. I like one of the top ones, if possible, usually pairing with a shortstop. I like that double whammy if I can. And then jumping back in after 100 has been my trend because I'm usually going pitching relievers like we talked about earlier. But I don't mind that 81 through 140. Like if I don't get one of the top seven or eight, I could see myself double going hard after like the Jaren Duran down tier as yeah. well, like 16 through 30. I want two on this board. No matter what, when I leave, that's
and I'm going to try to get two in the top 100. Always easier said than done, especially in 15 teamers when there's just you don't have that many picks. But just given to me what the kind of relative value cliff is after like pick 120, like I don't even Altuve, you may even play at second base. So the cliff after George Springer, pretty much the rest of this sheet here is pretty sizable for me.
All right. Well, that'll wrap it up, everybody. Ryan, anything else you'd like to leave the listeners with? Get your listener league entries in if you're interested. Yes. We got 30 spots to go. Let's wrap this thing up. And the NFBC would like to lock in these dates and start setting up rooms. So if you're interested, get in.
Yeah, please get those listener league signups in. I'm starting to slot leagues probably on Friday. And then I don't know, man. It's been a fun but busy week. So we'll play some golf this weekend, I think. Get out a little bit.
Sounds like a great idea. Make sure you put some sunscreen on. It's gonna be a beautiful time out there for you.
Yeah, you know, I can't be coming back looking like you from vacation. So I have to look
no one
all
wants
pale.
To look like me, period. So that's just
give me the ick.
Yeah, I'll say it'll give you the ick, and you don't want anything to do with that. But we'll wrap it up there. Again, everybody, thanks for listening. Nice active chat today on the YouTube.
Yes, thanks, guys. Yep.
Appreciate all the support once again. And we'll be back with you guys next week with Outfield Preview 2 and Preview 3 on Tuesdays and Thursdays. But for now, make sure you follow Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. I'm at BD Intrick, and this was Bubba and the Bloom, episode 310. Catch you all next time.